Hello and welcome to TNT, the Technology and Things podcast. Your host, Paul Ferraro, is a former IT exec and currently a technology advisor. Jeff Kruger, a fellow technology enthusiast, is the co-host. They both spent many years working for a Fortune 500 company and are both passionate about leadership, technology, and the community.
Welcome to another edition of Technology and Things. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, Paul.
Today we are joined by David Kudlowski, our field CTO from Evotech.
Hi, David.
Hey, guys.
What's happening?
Not much. Same old.
This is David's, how many times have you done the podcast now?
So this is my second, which I think makes me a pro now, right?
Yeah, you're officially, you're officially a pro.
We'll put your card in the mail.
Yep. And we can start paying you after you do 10 of these. So,
really?
Okay.
Well, I don't. That's not my contract.
No. That's in David's contract.
Oh, okay.
That's
great.
That's different.
Yeah.
Anyways, today we are joined by Chandra Sekar and Ashish Shah. They are with Avi Networks, or now with VMware. And Chandra is a VP of marketing, and Ashish Shah is a senior director of product management. And so Avi Networks was acquired, I believe, in 2019 by VMware. Is that right, David?
Yeah, it sounds about right. Yeah.
Both of those gentlemen came over from that acquisition. And so we're going to talk to them about that. I think also VMworld was last week. I think David attended. Did you attend all of it or some of it?
I attended some of it because, you know, it's kind of spread out all over. There were sessions at like 2 in the morning Pacific time. But yeah, it was last week.
Oh, so did they do like a worldwide kind of a thing where people?
It was worldwide. It was a very interesting event. I really enjoyed it. It was my first one.
Nice. Yeah, I'd been to obviously VMworld in the past, but I really haven't been able to go to any of these virtual conferences yet. It's hard to do because you have to.
They are hard.
You have to block out your calendar.
Yeah, yeah, and then you have to actually attend them. And
yeah.
You know, there's something to be said for being like a captive audience in the room. Yeah, like I've been to a virtual conference, and I as soon as the presenter is not interesting, I am like off shopping on Amazon or doing something else. And then after a while, you kind of go like, wait, I'm scratching my head. What am I doing here? So like you do really get to a sense of who the great presenters are and who the ones that are not the best because... yeah, you just end up doing other stuff.
Yeah, it's really easy to wander away.
Oh, yeah, you're literally already away. Yeah. So,
all right, well, we'll jump right in. We'll let them in here and we'll get started.
Go to evotech.com/TNT30 and enter our contest for this episode. 3 lucky winners will receive a $250 Amazon gift card. Please enter by October 21st, 2020.
We're not going to spend our usual 10 minutes of build-up.
Okay.
Welcome on the podcast, guys.
Hi.
Morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
We're doing well. Is our audio clear?
Audio is it's excellent.
We can read you 5x5.
Yeah. How about Ashish?
I'm able to hear. I'm just finding another place to sit and I'll turn my video a bit. Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. You sound good.
I like the halo around your head.
Oh yeah,
I didn't plan it that way.
I just noticed that too.
I certainly don't deserve it. So
that's not true, Jeffrey. It looks good. I think we're gonna have to make that
it's
a permanent.
It's not true that it looks good, or it's not true that I deserve it.
I don't know. Okay, I'm confused. So Chandra and Ashish, you guys just came back from VMworld. Well, virtually came back from VMworld.
That's right.
How was it?
It was a great show. I mean, over 100,000 registrants and attendance in the sessions were much higher than average simply because people had to just sign into their computer and registration was essentially completely free this year. So well-attended sessions, lots of good interaction. We had a nice sort of after-event celebrity chef dinner event that we invited a few of our customers to and prospects. And so that was good, too.
Nice.
Was it a virtual chef or a real chef?
Yeah, no, it was actually a real chef, but a virtual event.
good clarification there.
Yeah, like 2020 is so confusing. It's like, did you go to the conference in person or did you virtually go to the conference?
Yeah, like, I like that.
The real chef, virtual event. Okay, so how did that work
ingredients
then?
Ingredients got shipped and people had all of the stuff at their homes and they joined the Zoom from their kitchens with an Avi apron and started cooking with the chef.
Oh, cool. And who is the chef?
It was Bo McMillan from Food Network.
Oh, cool.
Very nice.
Yeah. That's great. Wow. You guys really roll out the red carpet.
Well, it probably costs a lot less than throwing those big parties with all the... You know.
I don't know, shipping ingredients though, that can get costly, huh?
It did.
He's like, yeah.
The VP of marketing's like, yeah, I know exactly how much it costs.
I had to sign off on that.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, maybe we could get started with, we were kind of talking a little bit about how Avi Networks and VMware came together. I'd be interested in your perspective on you know, why that was significant and what does that really mean for customers?
Yeah, so, you know, as you guys know, Avi Networks got its start way back in 2012. And one of the reasons that the founding team saw the opportunity in the application delivery space was that it was dominated by players that were selling appliances for the last couple of decades, even a little prior to the dot-com era. And very little had changed in load balancing since then. And along the time, computing had changed and how people thought about computing and applications had changed quite significantly with virtualization, with containers, with cloud, and so on. But application delivery continued to be delivered in that appliance form factor, right? So the founding team said, you know, here's an opportunity to take a software-defined approach to this problem and solve it elegantly by creating a distributed data plane and a distributed architecture. And so VMware's vision was very well aligned to that. I mean, VMware had started building its networking capabilities with the acquisition of Nicira back at the turn of the decade as well. And they had been steadily building up their overall portfolio of networking products over time, including the acquisition of VeloCloud a couple of years before Avi. And so their vision is one of essentially the idea of a virtual cloud network, right? One that is completely software defined, that allows organizations to enable a much bigger set of opportunities, new business models, and deliver services to all applications and data, irrespective of where these applications are running. And so there was very, very close alignment in terms of Avi's vision as well as VMware's in sort of bringing that very flexible model of application services to applications running in any environment. And there was a lot of commonality in terms of customers and buying decision makers. And overall, it was a win-win for our customers and partners when we brought this together.
So it sounds like it's been a pretty successful, you know, integration between the two companies. And how has it been with Pat Gelsinger? I've had the fortune of talking to a number of times over the years, and he's a obviously fantastic individual. But how has it been, you know, kind of merging in with a much larger company and on all of that?
Well, I'd say, you know, with VMware, I think because of the product fit and the sort of the philosophical alignment in terms of architecture and sort of bringing that public cloud experience to the data center and any private cloud, and you know, the whole alignment with VMware was a literal hand in glove fit for Avi.
Nice.
And you know, and while we were acquired into the networking and security business unit, what it allows us to do is essentially VMware entered the application delivery market with the acquisition of Avi. So we're able to tap into VMware's vast network of customers as well as partners. And, you know, we couldn't be happier with the alignment with VMware and the integration that we have had. Ashish, do you want to add anything to that?
No, that's right. So at VMware, Avi is offering both a standalone load balancing solution that works with everybody's product, but also a better together story with the larger VMware product portfolio. So it's a dual-pronged strategy, as Chandra said, right? VMware entered the load balancing and application delivery market. And so it will take on the legacy players in the large $4-5 billion load balancing market. And of course, we will integrate deeply with VMware NSX and VCF and Tanzu product portfolio as we go.
Nice, fantastic. And then what are some of the considerations or things that that people need to be thinking about in this sort of new, you know, modern application delivery space? Like what's that looking like? And maybe if you could break that down for us.
Sure. Yeah, I'll do that. So at the end of the day, one thing we should remember is that it's all about the applications, right? The infrastructure exists to support application performance, availability, security, and so on. So the infrastructure needs to evolve with the applications. So what are some of the things that have been changing over the last few years? First, a public cloud-like experience, whether you're on-prem or in cloud, which means elasticity and automation, right? If you go to a public cloud today and you spin up an application and configure a load balancer, you don't decide how big, how small, where, right? That's infrastructure's job, that's cloud's job. Well, you want the same kind of flexibility and automation on-prem or anywhere for that matter, right? So whether you're an on-prem or one or multiple public clouds, you want a consistent experience that's elastic, where as the traffic grows for an application, your infrastructure or load balancing or application delivery solution evolves. And also closely tied to that is automation and self-service, where you shouldn't be in the business of managing infrastructure. As an application developer, you shouldn't be in the business of deciding how big a certain infrastructure piece needs to be or when it should be scaled out and so on, right? So that automation has to be key component of your infrastructure for applications. And then the final piece is the evolution of containers, right? The application architectures are changing from monolithic to microservices based. That's driving VM to container evolution. So the application delivery infrastructure needs to adapt to these multi-infrastructure, not just multi-cloud, but multi-infrastructure paradigm, where some applications might be bare metal, some might be VM, some might be containers. How do you provide that consistent experience that is native to that infrastructure?
I think, you know, the key thing, Paul, here is that we're going from a world where, you know, you have to move away from the paradigm of my infrastructure or my appliance is too important to fail, mm-hmm. right? We don't have that model in the public cloud. Nobody worries about whether any one particular computing instance is going to be up and running at all times.
Well, you actually want to consider it to actually fail, right? I mean, you want to go like, this is definitely going to crash and burn at some point. This is going to, you know, and how do we adapt to that?
And we joke around talking about it as pets versus cattle. This idea that, you know, you have appliances that are like your pets. You know exactly what the status of each of them is. I mean, in fact, one of our customers in the banking industry joked about this a while back, and he said, "I used to know exactly about my appliances, my load balancing appliances." You know, he would say, "Jeff over here needs additional capacity. You know, Mark over there needs an upgrade," and so on. So I used to know exactly what it is. And with Avi, I don't really care because it's a distributed fabric. I don't even know where my load balancing or my virtual service actually runs, on which load balancer exactly. It's a fungible model of infrastructure, and load balancing simply works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? And as someone who used to manage flow balancers, I remember, you know, being a networking guy by trade, it's like, oh my God, here's this appliance that I have to manage. Can I just put an IP address on it and be done with it? I really don't care about the applications and all of this stuff and all the little templates here and there. And troubleshooting it was difficult, right? As a network guy, you're kind of like, I just want to live below that tier. And so I think, you know, my first introduction to Avi, when I kind of looked at the graphical user interface, I was like, oh, wow, this makes it a lot easier for not only for me to operate, but maybe I can just, you know, give it to the application guys, because they don't have to be rocket scientists or network engineers to be able to operate the solution, right? They don't need to know where the appliance physically lives. It no longer matters. So just the way that, you know, the system from design was focused on applications was tremendous.
Thank you. Yeah. And we would often talk about how Avi sort of introduced the first load balancer that can be demoed. Right. I mean, there's actually something to see. So,
right.
and on the same note, right, it's the last load balance you'll ever buy. What I mean by that is it runs on any commodity infrastructure. You don't have to worry about my end of life or when I need to rip and replace those. Right. It's, you run on commodity x86. Mm-hmm. So as your servers get replaced, well, the same software now moves on to the latest generation of Intel CPUs and you get the better performance out of that. So you don't need to worry about managing the life cycle of the physical appliances.
Yeah, that's great.
I got a question. How do you guys view the fact that, you know, sort of folks are looking at, you know, open source software and saying, well, do I even need a dedicated solution like Avi anymore, right? In my view, sort of the hardware load balancer is going to, you know, definitely disappear in a few years. But there's a lot of software out there, right? I mean, you have HAProxy, you have Nginx, right? Customers are saying, I just want to consume this like a container. And why do I have to pay for it? What's the value there, right? How do you guys address that?
Sure. So if you look at any load balancing environment, or let's start with the Avi platform, right? Yes, there are the load balancing features. Well, HTTP, SSL, TLS, termination, and so on, that, yeah, most load balancers can do that. But the benefit comes from the platform and the architecture, right? So this, what Chandra talked about earlier, right, the central control plane or distributed data plane. Today's world, nobody other offers that architecture. So what are the benefits of that? The benefit is that, well, you are out of the business of managing individual appliances, even with the software. The names that you mentioned, you're still responsible for managing the spin up and the scale out and then the life cycle of those software load balancers, right? Just making it software doesn't mean modern. Mm-hmm. Compare that experience to a fabric where there's a single REST API endpoint, your UI, your CLI, or whatever automation you're using, you're configuring to that single REST API endpoint. The job of deciding where to place that application for load balancing, when to spin up at additional capacity, how to do self-healing environment when one of them fails, spin up a replacement or automatically, how to auto-scale your environment, whereas the traffic grows, you scale out to capacity, and the traffic shrinks, you scale back in, right? How do you scale application workloads when the application is the bottleneck? Those platform capabilities, that being able to do active deployments, not wasting capacity with active standby, being able to do complete automated self-healing, that's where the value comes from. And it's not about a feature. It's not about my load balancing algorithm is better than somebody else's. We didn't build a better widget. We built a better platform. Yeah. And so that's where the customers see the value. And then, of course, there is the analytics that really differentiates us.
Yeah. I'm assuming then with the way you're explaining it, to me it sounds like less overhead in managing it all, you know, easier to do global type deployments and you don't have sort of silos of teams and all of that kind of thing. So it sounds like a significant impact on just the operational side of it and all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll give you a couple of examples, right? So first of all, it comes from active deployments. So I think in today's age, deploying active standby and wasting 50% of capacity is criminal, I think.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Yeah.
Which statute is that?
It's outlawed in all the 50 states.
It's a modern architecture statute or cloud statute. Okay, also, because of the appliances which cannot scale out, typically our customers run at 15% capacity. So you're 5 to 7x over provisioned, right? Mm-hmm. Because you want to put in for next 5 years of growth, you can't scale out. But that's the, so this is just the CapEx savings, if you will, or the infrastructure savings by right-sizing it and pay as you grow. The operational part you talk about is I think, even more important. Let me give an example. We had a banking customer that said, before Avi, with our legacy hardware or software appliances, it used to take us 23 days for an application, between the application team creating a ticket to create a VIP to the infrastructure team delivering that. 23 days. With Avi, 23 seconds. Self-service, right? Multi-tenant self-service RBAC, fine-grain RBAC. That is significant savings, right? And that's possible because of the architecture. It's not because of API. Everybody has API. But what does your API want to do? If you have to make a manual decision saying, in a spreadsheet, okay, out of these 10 appliances, this VIP goes here, this VIP goes here, and then call an API, that's not automation. That's just programmability. But if you say, here is my VIP, go, and a few seconds later, everything is done end-to-end, including getting an IP address through IPAM to publishing the FQDN to DNS to spinning up a new load balancers and everything in between, that's automation. That's a cloud-like experience. And that's where the savings are coming from.
An interesting story here, Paul and David, is one of a customer of Avi's. They had a scenario where they looked at the log files in the Avi controller about 3 days after an actual catastrophic failure had happened in their environment. And the catastrophic failure had happened because an engineer who was not directly connected with the deployment of Avi went up to a rack and turned it off accidentally. And one of the service engines or load balancers was actually running in that rack. And what the system had done, unbeknownst to these guys, was recovered from that failure gracefully by rebalancing the traffic onto service engines that were running in other racks. And, you know, the service engine that was essentially killed was put out of service, and new service engines were deployed automatically by the Avi controller. And the administrators didn't even know this until they were actually looking for some other issue when they found that the service engine was killed at so-and-so time on Monday morning. And so that's what we mean by self-healing. And, you know, they had uncovered this problem accidentally, but they hadn't even noticed the system failure as a result of that.
That's a
and the architecture that Ashish mentioned is such a critical underpinning of everything that is possible with Avi.
Yeah, that's a pretty powerful story there. Be able to
sort of an accidental chaos monkey scenario.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
We have a customer talking about Chaos Monkey. We have a customer running at a very large scale in public cloud, Azure and on-prem, where as part of their live deployment trial, they keep killing the load balancer Avi service engines that are running as a VM or bare metal, just to make sure that there is no impact on the traffic. So this is how they test, right?
Nice. Real-world scenario. That's good.
Yeah.
That's the kind of testing you
should
be doing.
Going to make a comment that you can always rely on people to mess something up.
Yeah. Exactly.
I have and kind of to add to that, it's interesting. You know, VMware just announced intent to acquire SaltStack, right? Which is, you know, a lot of our customers are using to sort of automate and provision, you know, the way they roll out their IT solutions and applications. And so it sounds like with VMware, there's a story, right? I mean, you know, all the way to, you know, you mentioned Nasir to that conversation with, hey, we want to build something here that does this fabric and automates things and kind of holistic view at infrastructure. Then you have, well, as we move up the stack to applications, Avi made perfect sense. Now wrapping that with, you know, automating everything, the kind of the entire path of your application. So that's very interesting. I'm really excited to see where this goes, right? sort of bringing all of these solutions together and trying to think about, what you guys are going to be capable of in the next, 18 to 24 months.
We're really looking forward to that, David. It's fascinating when we actually see customers sort of realize the true power of a software platform like this, and they're able to solve real world problems in their environments. I mean, some of these companies, such as Adobe and PayPal, customers like that, these guys have applications not just being rolled out every day, but really sometimes several times a day. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when you're looking at that velocity of applications or application updates, you need an infrastructure model that matches that agility in the applications. And so in their case, they have to do like literally blue-green testing as part of their application rollouts. They have to do canary upgrades to real-time applications. How do you do that with a hardware-based environment? You need the flexibility of software where you can drive sort of 90% of the traffic to your production instance and 10% of the traffic to your updated version, verify that is all fine, and then flip over and send all the traffic to the new version. So they are doing sort of real-time deployments at every instance, and they need that flexibility to be able to do that.
What is a typical, like, when you get engaged with a new customer, who is typically engaging with you? Is it coming more from the application side, or is it sort of a combination of that and infrastructure, traditional networking type folks, or how does that roll?
I think it's a great question, Paul. I think it depends. We see a combination depending on the use case. So more traditional load balancing, replacing the legacy with AVI with a more software-defined approach, we see the network team as the first point of interaction. But when they show their application teams the analytics that David was talking about, they get floored and they actually help with the network team and say, no, we want that now, right? Because the network teams are, at the end of the day, trying to create a self-service experience.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody wants to create a self-service experience where they don't want to be the, pardon my word, ticket monkeys, right? That's why one of our customers called it, said, we don't want to be ticket monkeys, right? Where we get a ticket and we do all the things and then close the ticket. We want the application team to be doing self-service. And so that's why you get a combination of those.
Yeah.
The first point of interaction typically for the legacy replacement is network team, with the application team quickly following. In more modern use cases like the Kubernetes deployments or cloud deployments, it's usually the application teams or the lines of businesses which are looking for something that's completely software-defined, completely automated themselves, and they've tried open source or the native solutions, they don't have all the features, so they're looking for something that's more enterprise-grade, and then they pull in their network teams. So depending on the use case, it starts at one place, but teams do get engaged.
Cool. No, that makes a lot of sense. And then you mentioned Kubernetes, and I was thinking about, I've definitely worked with some clients that are trying to modernize, monolithic applications, turn, sort of take them and break them down into microservices, which is, huge, huge efforts and everything. How do you guys fit into that sort of space? I mean, I'm assuming, like we talked, David mentioned Nginx and some of those types of players tend to be involved in those to make sure that, you're routing things correctly and all of that. Is that something that you guys are also heavily involved with, or?
Oh, absolutely. So if you look back again, remember where we started, it's all about the applications, right? And application services, load balancing, security, visibility, and so on. Whether you are Kubernetes or VMs, right? Or bare metal, or legacy applications or microservices, those requirements are the same.
Yeah.
So we play the same role of traffic management, security, and observability for container ingress, for Kubernetes ingress. So we are an enterprise-grade, fully integrated load balancer and ingress controller into one in terms of more optimized design and architecture. And we, in fact, have very large customers like Deutsche Bank who have deployed us in very large Kubernetes-based deployments on-prem and public cloud at a, over the last 3 or 4 years. So absolutely, we see customers deploying us in all sorts of use cases. In fact, that's one of our competitive advantage, that it's the same piece of software, same architecture, same automation, same bit, same licenses that works across your VMs, bare metal, container workloads, whether it's on-prem or cloud.
Nice.
And then the beauty there is automation. So one more thing, Paul, you should know is that running there or working in cloud or working with container is one thing, but providing a cloud-native experience where as a developer, you don't know whether you're using a built-in tool or an enterprise-grade tool like Avi, while getting all the features, that's a difference. So to give an example, in a Kubernetes environment, you don't have to, as a developer, you don't have to interact with Avi at all. You use Kube APIs and the CRDs to configure all the ingress controller and service type LBs. And it gets translated to full Avi feature set. In public cloud, you don't have to worry about auto-scaling groups and scale sets and so on. That's Avi's job. Just like you, when you configure ELB with a single API and it takes care of itself, same with Avi. So we are, a lot of time we spend in our development is integrating with the ecosystems that we run in so that the customers get the cloud native experience in any environment they're running in while getting all the enterprise grade features. And that's again, one of the true differentiators for us.
Yeah. You know, Paul, I'll just add to what Ashish said. One of the interesting observations that our CTO, Runga, used to make back when we first started doing our Kubernetes support is this idea that this architecture of an application services fabric where, you know, the individual data plane members can be spread across the infrastructure, and be close to the individual applications. So in the Kubernetes case, as microservices, as you sort of decompose the application into little small parts, if your infrastructure can follow it, and if it can be close to each of the microservices, it's able to deliver a much better level of service. And you know, with Avi, all of this is centrally managed, right? And not only that, because Avi is completely agnostic and neutral to the underlying infrastructure, we can actually bridge between containers and traditional VM-based environments. So if you think about it, if you need an application component, I mean, not everybody is going to start with a greenfield Kubernetes application.
Right.
There may be brownfield applications that you may refactor into containers. And so there may be databases and others that you may not want to migrate immediately. And those are going to be running in VM-based environments. So how do you bridge between your modern, maybe your presentation layer that is built in containers to your database that is running in your VM-based environment?
Yeah, no, right? I think
those are all the types of use cases that Avi's able to address.
That's critical because when you're talking about these big, you know, enterprise-type applications that clients are running, I mean, they've got to do all this. They've got to refactor them while they're flying the airplane, right? They're not, it's not exactly like they can just build it all from scratch on the side and then bring it up. I mean, they've got to kind of do this over a period of time. And so that having that kind of functionality is seems to be critical. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Cool. Any other, David, any other thoughts, questions before we wrap up?
I wonder what you guys think is the next sort of next big thing that Avi would be able to help customers with. Sort of what are some of the new challenges that you see arise with some of your customers that you think, you know, we definitely need to build something or maybe building something, then have to give us all the details. But you know, something new that's on the horizon that you guys think you'll be able to help customers with.
Ashish, I'll take a first crack, and I'd love for you to follow that with your perspective as well. So, David, one of the things to remember, and this is why Ashish's point earlier about the architecture is so critical. And with Avi, what we've done is we've created a flexible platform for the delivery of application services. I mean, we talked at length about load balancing today. But Avi, you would know that Avi is not only a load balancer, it is also a GSLB, like a global server load balancing capability is built into the product. It also has a web application firewall, and it also has a container networking capability built into it. So all of these are delivered from a single platform. And so there is no difference between buying the load balancing portion of Abhi versus the WAF versus the DSLB instance. So what we're able to do is layer on capabilities on this platform, but yet serve it through the same sort of automation and central management that we are able to provide. So as you might imagine, we can tack on additional capabilities, including application security capabilities. We have DDoS already built into the product. And so all of these security capabilities can be provided from a single platform. Ashish, do you want to comment about other such capabilities that we can build on top?
Yeah, so these, talking about the security, right? So we have, because of the controller-based architecture, there is a lot of learning that is possible and that some of them is already built in, right? So these service engines, as they collect logs and metrics, they send it to the controller where there is a big data analytics engine that runs. So we recently added significant learning capabilities to a WAF engine. And we're going to continue to build upon that, where our vision is to do a zero config WAF. See, one of the biggest issue with WAF is complexity and the perceived fear that if I turn something on, my good traffic will get blocked.
Right.
And and with Abhi, we have solved the problem because of the learning based engine and the scale out architecture. And the tremendous amount of telemetry that we collect. We're going to build upon that, build much more learning capabilities on that. So the we envision a day where a WAF is checked on from day one, and the configuration, the policies, the learnings are automatically done and implemented. That's what we call zero config WAF. And so that's one of the visions that we have. And that applies to WAF and then the DDoS and all the security capabilities. But that's what we are evolving to. And again, it's based on our platform, the architecture that we built.
Cool. Well, we really appreciate you guys coming on. Congratulations on a successful VMworld. That sounds pretty cool. I'm assuming you could probably go check those sessions out. They'll all be available for people to go see.
Yeah, absolutely. And we recommend those. And we have multiple customers who provided commentary, and including PayPal and Symantec and others who talked about their use cases with Abhi. So we definitely recommend you check it out.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Chandra. Thank you, Ashish, for coming on.
Thanks for the opportunity, Paul.
Been a real pleasure talking to you guys and learning more about Abhi. And David Kay, always great to see you. I saw your little Lego man in the background finally, so that's good. Cool. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
All righty.
Very good. Thank you.
Have a good rest of the day. Yeah, I actually learned quite a bit. I didn't know that much about those guys, so that was nice to get a little more refresher on what they're doing and
cool stuff.
Yeah,
neat.
Go to evotech.com/TNT30 and enter our contest for this episode. Three lucky winners will receive a $250 Amazon gift card. Please enter by October 21st, 2020.
Any closing thoughts, Mr. Kalarowski?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we didn't speak to it specifically, but I think some of those learning capabilities, right? Sprinkle a little bit of AI in there. you've built the platform, right?
Yeah.
Now think about this. You know, if the platform can talk to all these other components of your infrastructure, right? And it senses something, what actions can it take all the way down the line, perhaps to a network port or to an individual host, to really give you something right away that says, hey, we saw the application misbehave here. We took these 15 troubleshooting steps across these, you know, five or six different infrastructure components. We've identified what the problem is and we remediated it. And we're just letting you know, oh, nirvana.
Yeah.
Utopia. Love it.
Well, we'll be on the lookout for that. Maybe next week.
Yeah. That's a little bit of a futurist coming out of me.
Yeah.
Thanks, all right, guys.
Well, thanks a lot. Have a great day. And appreciate you listening.